AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
So, it is down to you, and it is down to me. We're paddling in the deep end this morning, talking economy, conflict, ag banking, high finance, interest rates, and we'll wrap up with the outlook for the land market in 2022. Woo! I'm going to need more unicorn tea to get through all of this. Live from the Frozen Humans section via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Dr. Vince Malanga from LaSalle Economics, then it's Ed Elfman from the American Bankers Association, and later Doug Hensley from Hertz Real Estate checks in. Right after the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. It's me, Davis Michelson, behind the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk, in for Chip Flory. Mr. Flory will be rejoining us tomorrow morning. This afternoon, we're back. We've got John Payne back up to the plate. He was good enough to take his first swing. Let me keep the baseball analogy thing going. Take his first swing. I would score it at least a triple from yesterday's afternoon show. He did a great job. We talked to Josh Linville about it was an interesting conversation between the two of them because they sort of speak in that same language that's just a step above the way a lot of us are used to thinking about fertilizer markets. And even the idea of perhaps even hedging opportunities in fertilizer markets. It was a really interesting conversation. So check out yesterday's afternoon show. You can get it on the app. But we've got John again this afternoon, and so we're really looking forward to hearing from him. This morning, there's so much that I want to talk about. I feel like everybody says that before a radio show. Right? Oh, there's so much I want to get to. No, seriously. Because, like, think about it. We've got the Fed expected to maybe say when a lot of people have been looking at March for interest rate increases or at least some moves, maybe even at least just some signals. We've got Dr. Vince Malanga, but I also want to ask him because this Russia thing it's heating up, obviously. It's all over the news if you've been watching the news. I was in hotels most of last week, and so I actually did watch some of the news, and man, it's quite the deal. I'm curious what a conflict with Russia might mean for our economy. There are those who say, well, war, the stock market likes war. It's bullish for stocks. I don't know. I'm curious to see what Vince's take is on that. And then Ed Elfman from the American Bankers Association. We've talked to him before. It's been a super long time. I think it was July of last year when we spoke with Mr. Elfman last. I want to see the condition of the banking industry right now. Is there still plenty of money to lend? What's the story? What's up with the bankers? And then, of course, Doug Hensley. We love to talk to Doug about the real estate markets, the farmland markets, and I felt like now is as good a time as any to look ahead to 2022, and so we'll get that in the fourth segment. And Karen's coming up, too, here pretty quick. So let me get to the news. The continuing global recovery faces multiple challenges as the pandemic enters its third year, the International Monetary Fund said in a report today. The rapid spread of the Omicron variant has led to renewed mobility restrictions in many countries and increased labor shortages, it noted. Meanwhile, supply disruptions still weigh on activity and are contributing to higher inflation, adding to pressures from strong demand and elevated food and energy prices. Indeed, record debt and rising inflation constrain the ability of many countries to address renewed disruptions. And that might be something we can bring up with Dr. Malanga, something I hadn't considered before, but the debt incurred to, get through the pandemic and now rising inflation. Some countries may have a hard time dealing with that if they're basically just strapped for cash. Prices of lithium carbonate have quintupled in China from a year earlier, and other battery materials from nickel to cobalt have also been rising and could remain elevated as new supply will take time to come online. Shortages are also flaring in some lesser-known battery components, adding to the risks of concentration in electric vehicle supply chains already dominated by China. That has made securing material supplies more important as car makers seek to ensure they can keep production lines moving. And in a related note, lawmakers who support petroleum and ethanol industries joined forces to oppose the Biden administration's push to electrify the federal vehicle fleet, marking a rare moment of unity. 50 Republicans, including 17 from oil-rich Texas and 21 from the U.S. Corn Belt, warned Biden that his executive order requiring the federal government to purchase only zero-emission vehicles risks forfeiting climate progress and will make the U.S. dangerously dependent on China. American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall said his group was, quote, pleased that the Supreme Court has agreed to take up the important issue of what constitutes waters of the U.S. under the Clean Water Act and hopes the case will bring more clarity to the regulations. USDA says it will not enforce the White House order for federal employees to be vaccinated against COVID-19. That's while a court appeal is pending. Now, as of January 19th, 88.6% of USDA employees were vaccinated and 9.7% have requested a medical or religious exemption, said a spokesman. And finally, China has published trial rules for the approval of gene-edited plants as it seeks to bolster its food security. The new guidelines published by China's Ag Ministry come amid a raft of measures aimed at overhauling its seed industry, seen as a weak link in efforts to ensure the country can feed the world's biggest population. From the land of from the frozen humans section here, let's bring in Karen Bonert. She's down somewhere just a little bit warmer. Karen, Palm Springs, really?
I know. Does it get any better for a Tuesday in January?
I wouldn't think so. What are you doing?
Well, so I'm attending the International Dairy Food Association Dairy Forum. And so, yes, it's in Palm Springs, and dairy herd management teams up every year with IDFA to present the, and this year we'll be presenting the 2022 Innovative Dairy Farmer of the Year Award. So it's a cool thing, and we're presenting it to the Hildebrand Farms Dairy in Junction City, Kansas.
Oh, fantastic. Now, are they the ones that are featured in this article here?
Yes, they are. And so the thing that excites me, I think when you think about the future of dairy, Davis, and what it takes for farms to stick around, in my opinion, you have two options. You either have to get bigger, right, or you have to get innovative. And the Hildebrand family, who milks about 150 cows, did the latter. They got innovative. And they're humble, and they just said, basically, we're just trying to do better every single day. And I think every farmer tries to do better every single day. But they're doing some really cool things, from processing their own milk to multifaceted industry partnerships to tapping into that A2 milk market. So those advancements have kind of paved that sustainable path for this four-generation farm. So it's a really cool thing, that it's an argument that you don't necessarily have to grow in cow numbers to create longevity in the dairy business.
You can see that article in Dairy Herd Management. It's titled Innovation Drives Sustainable Success. Karen, I wish I could join you there in Palm Springs. I feel like we should talk about this more face to face, but alas, I've got to finish the radio show. So you'll have to enjoy it on my behalf. Can you do that for me?
Hey, I'll bottle up that vitamin D and bring it east.
That would be outstanding. Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. When we return here on AgriTalk, we'll have Dr. Vince Malanga from LaSalle Economics. We're talking some super big picture stuff, and we're going to find out where we're at in the economy and what conflict with Russia might mean for our position within the economy, and what maybe we could do to, I don't know, to guard against it. We'll see what Vince thinks coming up next on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
The truth is hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk. Welcome back to it, everybody. Your pal Davis Michelson behind the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you are well today, wherever you might be. A little chilly here in central Iowa, but not too bad. It's pretty outside. I mean, we've had some semi-frequent dustings of snow, so it's kind of like there's a, you know, if I sort of squint my eyes a little bit, it almost looks like there's just a lovely little coat of powdered sugar over everything. That's the way I prefer to look at it anyway. To help us focus through our squinted eyes, we've got Dr. Vince Malanga at LaSalle Economics. Dr. Malanga, thank you for joining us on AgriTalk this morning.
Yeah, you're welcome, Davis. How you doing?
I'm doing outstanding, sir. Let's get right into it. I want to talk to you about, and this is kind of like big picture stuff, so you can take this about any direction that you want to, but should there be conflict between the U.S. or at least between NATO with the U.S. supporting and Russia, what sorts of economic impacts might we expect?
Oh, I think the immediate response to that would be a spike up in the energy markets. I think you'd see a sharp rise in both the price of crude oil and the price of natural gas. I think given the fact that Ukraine is such a large wheat producer, I think that would cause a spike up in agricultural commodity prices. And I think you could sort of expect a pretty sharp negative reaction in equity markets around the world. Now, how long that might last is a function of how long the conflict might last, but that would be the immediate reactions for sure.
Now, does it take a boots on the ground sort of, you know, a land war type conflict, or is it, you know, I mean, we're the stock market's having some trouble, and maybe that's not even related. The wheat market certainly seems to be responding to the upside as if something is actually going on there. But, I mean, it takes shots fired to really have the full impact. Fair?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And I think I would put the odds of that as being pretty slim. Sure, the risk is there. But there's hard to decipher what the goals of the Russians are right now, whether they just want to attempt to embarrass the West or whether they have a strategy in mind to take over the country is anyone's guess, but certainly the sooner we get over this mess, the better it will be for everyone, and maybe that's why they want to drag it out for a long time.
Do you subscribe to the theory that Mr. Putin would like to reassemble the former Soviet Union?
Well, I think that's probably accurate. I think he's made that pretty clear, and he is getting older. You know, there's a lot of unrest in the inside Russia, so maybe he feels some sense of urgency to do that. And I think there's clearly a perception on the part of the Russians that the West is in some sense of disarray. And therefore, this may provide an opportune time. Let me remind you, when the Russians walked into Crimea back in 2012, Mr. Obama and his team made the blunt statement, "This will not stand." Well, if I'm not mistaken, 9 years later, it's standing. And so I think
standing.
He perceives some weakness in the administration, uh-huh. and may feel a sense of, you know, opportunity there.
We're getting way outside the economic scope, but just, you're a super smart guy. I know that you watch these things fairly closely, and but I'm concerned with how cozy Russia and China seemed to be. They've both got sort of fronts that the United States has opposed. China's got the Olympics thing coming up in February. I feel like that they're not going to make a move during the Olympics. Is there a chance that Russia and China sort of coordinate and make their moves at the same time, figuring a divided front here? Maybe they both get what they want.
Well, with China, you not only have the Olympics, you also have the Lunar New Year, and you excluded one country from that axis, which is Iran. And of course, right now, Iran is in discussions, some sense of discussions, with the U.S. and the some of the NATO countries in Europe about lifting sanctions that were imposed on the nuclear arms issue. So I think all three countries feel emboldened to a degree. I'm sure there's some sense of not only camaraderie there, but also joint efforts there. And it makes for a difficult situation, which is why markets are justifiably nervous about it all.
Yes, yes. Can we
Do
talk
I
just
think
a
they
little...
will invade the Ukraine? I guess if I had to bet 50 cents, I would say no. But then I don't mind losing 50 cents, I guess.
Never wager more than you're willing to lose. Is that the idea, sir?
Right.
That's good counsel right there. I hope somebody wrote that down. That's for you, somebody. I don't know who it is, but that was for somebody. So we're looking at the stock market a little bit. The Dow, the S&P, the NASDAQ all seem to be trending fairly negative as of late. Is this corrective in nature? Is it just sort of a setback for perhaps a move higher in the future? What's your thought?
Well, you've got, of course, you got two things going on simultaneously here. Not only do you have the unrest in Eastern Europe, but you also have a perceived change in monetary policy coming from the Federal Reserve. And so as a result of that, it's pretty hard to measure which is having the greater impact on equity markets and financial markets generally, although I would say that it's the perceived change in monetary policy that is probably having the greater effect on prices in equities, not only in the U.S., but worldwide.
So the word was we may see the Fed tip its hand and talk of, maybe put a pin in March as a time to maybe raise rates, at least the one time. What is your thought on that?
Well, if you look back over the last 5 weeks, we've gone from a general consensus that the first rate hike from the Fed would come probably sometime in the early part of 2023. In a matter of 4 weeks' time, and during a period where the economic data has shown softness rather than strength, we've gone from no rate increases in 2022 to a simultaneous end the asset purchase program, start reducing the balance sheet, and raise rates five times. And it seems to me a bit extreme, a whole lot extreme. And while I don't expect the chairman at his post-meeting press conference tomorrow to radically change expectations, I think expectations have gotten way, way ahead of the reality. And so if I'm right, and 3 months from now or 4 months from now, we're going to be looking at a softer economy, I think the threat of that kind of monetary adjustment will dissipate. And I think that would turn out to be a positive for asset values. So I think we're going through an adjustment in here. The market hasn't had a meaningful correction for a couple of years. Typically, a 10% correction is not unusual at all. And so I expect this to last a little bit longer in time, but I don't think it's going to last very long.
So the fear remains, though, that the Fed will overcompensate and become too aggressive.
Well, I think that's a legitimate fear given the concern they're expressing about inflation. And the big risk, in my opinion, is that the Fed overdoes it, that they tighten too much, and we wind up in a recession in the early part of 2023. I think the other risk is, given the fundamental fiscal tightening that's going on and the like, is that we wind up in a period where the Fed sort of backs away, inflation continues to fester, and we wind up with some sense of stagflation, which is something on the order of 1% growth and 5% inflation. So of the three alternatives, two of them are negative. And the Fed, I think, has to walk a real high wire act in here, whereby they don't tighten too much, but they don't tighten too little either. Typically, that's a tough act to follow.
Oh, boy, you said a mouthful there. Dr. Vince Malanga, thank you for talking so frankly with us, for your words, and we really appreciate you taking some time today. Dr. Vince Malanga from LaSalle Economics.
Thank you.
You bet. We'll talk again soon. That was Dr. Vince Malanga. Coming up, we've got Ed Elfman from the American Bankers Association on the other side of this markets report at the bottom of the hour. Don't go away.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio. Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, soybean meal lower, soybean oil higher, soybeans higher, but I was told not to trust an oil-led rally. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, for now, it's got the soybean market supported, but, you know, the soy complex is, you know, showing that mixed trade, especially in the products. But really, the story is the wheat market. Double-digit
yes.
gains again in the winter wheat contract, so they're pushing higher. A couple of factors there. HRW crop condition ratings released by individual states yesterday showed further deterioration during January. Probably not a big surprise there, given the drought situation down there and the wind damage that occurred in mid-December and further problems from that. And then the Russia-Ukraine situation with the heightened geopolitical tensions. And so that's got the wheat market off and running. Corn is pushing to the upside. So soybeans kind of following along those two, along with that strength in the soy oil market that you mentioned.
So far this week, wholesale beef has moved like molasses in January, dragging down the cattle.
The beef trade, we exploded, really, really strong trade coming out of the holidays there. It looks like probably the retailer has most of their needs met, and that slowed down. Not only the prices, they're still continuing to push higher, but more so the movement. And just waiting on cash cattle trade to develop. The feeder cattle, they're under heavy pressure because of the strength in the corn market this morning. And so that's probably the story so far within the cattle complex. And then hogs pushing to the upside again. So contract highs there and the deferred contracts and just really more explosive trade.
All right. Thanks, Brian. That's Brian Grady, editor of ProFarmer on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at #AgriTalk.
Welcome, welcome, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Your pal Davis Michelson here in for Chip Flory. Chip will be back tomorrow. We've got our Farmer Forum, but right before that, we've got Ken Erickson. Should be a great conversation. I know that he and Chip always have a lot to talk about. Standing by now, I've got Ed Elfman from the American Bankers Association. Mr. Elfman, thank you for joining us on AgriTalk this morning. How are you, sir?
Great. Thanks for having me on today.
You bet. You bet. The American Banking Association, tell us just a little bit about the association. It's been a long time since we talked. Refresh our readers on what you good folks do.
Yeah, so we're the trade association that represents the banking industry, the $22.5 trillion in the banking industry and the 2 million employees hired by those banks. On my end of the world, agriculture is a big part of what we do. I'm a dairy farm kid originally, all that fun stuff that goes into it. But I cover agriculture for ABA. And to give you a few stats on that side of the world, there's just over 5,000 banks in the United States, 4,000 of which have agriculture in their portfolio in
wow.
some way, shape, or form. It's a big chunk of the world. Now, that can be everything from, you know, horse farm in the Hamptons to 20,000 acres out in the Dakotas. Sure. But to have 80% of our industry involved in agriculture is really a big number. And then about a third of the banks in the country are considered farm banks, according to FDIC, which the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which is one of our regulators. So ag is a big part of the banking industry and what we do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, yeah. So I get, and I didn't realize 80%. Wow. So the ag economy itself must certainly have a humongous impact on the banking industry.
It really does. I mean, we're always tracking what's going on, where it's going. And the other side of it, when I talk about those farm banks, really the folks that qualify under that category, we're talking the smallest of small, right? Like my hometown of 1,500 people with a mm-hmm. bank on the corner of Main and Division, right?
Right.
and those banks, they rely on that local farm economy. And that's what keeps them in business. There's just not enough residential loans in a town like that to really keep a bank where they need to be. So you have the ag side, you have all the businesses related to agriculture. Mm-hmm. And as I always talk about from a policy standpoint and an overall banking standpoint, it's interesting when you look at agriculture and everything that affects farmers and what their world looks like and decisions that DC makes, good or bad. Banks are always kind of the second or third down the line on that. Right. So if you have some changes to policy in agriculture at USDA, it does affect the lender eventually. We have to pay attention to it. And we have to adjust accordingly. And we've been at it for a long time. So I think we're doing a pretty good job.
Have you got a sense of overall loan demand compared to maybe what you expect historically, what we've seen presently in the ag sector?
Yeah. So what's been really interesting in 2020, as we know, loan demand went down. And it was fascinating sitting in my shoes, getting questions from folks on why aren't banks making loans to farmers anymore? And we had to remind everybody that farmers, maybe a third of their income came from payments through the government. Right. And mm-hmm. when you have that happen, loan demand will go down, especially volume of loans, because those of us that are in agriculture know the last thing you're going to do is go and get an operating line when you've got cash to pay for it, right? You're not going to do a one-year note if you don't have to. At the same time, those loans went down, the operating line side in 2020, land loans actually went up. So we still saw land being sold and moving. And then in 21, that carried through, right? We started to see loan demand tick up more and more. We expect in 2022 that we're going to see a more loan demand overall. Mm-hmm. And there's a variety of reasons for that. One, obviously government payments are down big time. We could talk for an hour on what's going on there. But sure. I'm probably not your guy for that. and in reality, what's happening is these rising input costs combined with the government payment side going down means you got to get your financing from somewhere. So we fully expect lending to go up in the ag sector again for banks.
With just in time for interest rates to rise, would you say?
Well, and that's obviously we're tracking that. We're going to see what happens. The Fed makes decisions that are way above my pay grade and me being involved in those things. But at the end of the day, we just have to react to what the market's doing, right?
Sure.
What the Federal Reserve decides to do, what they charge for federal funds, things like that. We'll see where the interest rates go. Obviously, everybody's talking about things related to that, inflation and where the markets are and all those. But I can't give you a good prediction. If I could, I don't know if I'd be doing policy work for ABA. It'd probably be another line of business, to be honest.
So on the subject of loan demand and the perhaps increase there ahead, bank capitalization, how have they got cash to lend?
Oh yeah. Yeah. That one thing I will say about rural banks compared to their peers of the same size, community banks across the country, the ag and rural banks tend to outpace their peers on capitalization, on strength of the bank, all those types of things. And it's been something I've been at ABA almost 10 years that we've seen year over year. Part of that is, you know, small communities and rallying behind them and all those types of things. The other thing is the ag economy has been good overall for basically 20 years, right? So rural banks are well capitalized. They're in a good position to lend. The one thing I will say that we're running into a little bit, and this is not unusual across agriculture, and it's something that we're looking at as we go into the next farm bill and some other things, are smaller institutions may have a harder and harder time with larger operations. And that is due to different federal rules about how much any one bank can lend to an individual. They call it lending limits at these banks. When you get a $100 million bank, for example, in assets, their lending limit's going to be $2 to $3 million. It doesn't take much to get to $3 million anymore on a farm. You get a 10,000-acre farm with a lot of equipment, and if they own a good chunk of land, it's hard to pull that off. And so from a policy perspective and a DC perspective, that's one thing we are working through and trying to figure out is how do you help these smaller institutions continue to lend to folks that they might have been lending to for 30 years, but they've just outgrown their local bank. But going back to your original question on it, we're well capitalized and we're ready to lend. And that's part of the optimism about folks walking back in the door to take out operating lines and things like that into the next year.
Well, and speaking of the, you know, different types of loans and things, so overall loan demand has been down, but man, we've seen an awful lot of demand for farmland, and sales volume has been pretty decent. Have you noticed anything in particular on the land side as far as lending goes?
Yeah, so loan demand is up on the land side, and as we've all noticed, land continues to increase in price and cost, and they're only making so much of it, right? At the end of the day, and everybody wants a piece of it. And as Jason Henderson from the University of Purdue says, and I always like this, farmers don't want every piece of land in their county, just every piece that touches theirs. And when you look at that, we're seeing folks that when they have opportunities, they're trying to jump on it. We do a survey every year, and we had 450 folks participate in this survey last year. And here's a good one on the land side for you. 8 in 10 lenders say that land values increased in 2021, and 62% expect this trend to continue over the next 12 months. So from a banking standpoint, we fully expect land will continue to go up, and we're going to lend accordingly. One difficult side on the banking world for lending to land is a long-term loan like that. I talked about lending limits before, right? It eats up a chunk of the lending limits. To make it work cost-wise and to get you the good interest rates and all those types of things, it takes a little bit of work on our side. We do have a piece of legislation that's out currently being sponsored in the House and the Senate. It's the Enhancing Credit Opportunities in Rural America Act, ECORA, because in DC everything is an acronym. But ECORA would remove the taxation that banks pay on income earned from interest on farm real estate.
Okay.
And essentially what that means is we would lower our cost to put together a loan, pass that on to the consumer, right, on long-term land loans. So that's one thing we've been looking at and trying to move forward is as these land prices go up and we're trying to figure out how to lend to more folks on the land side of the world, here's some legislation to help us as an industry ultimately help farmers in that space. So, yeah, I guess the short answer, or short version of my long answer there is we're paying attention to all this and we're trying to figure out how to make more loans in that area.
For sure. Man, this has been a fascinating conversation. Just real quick, so the rural banks, the farm bank down on the block there on Main and Division, is there risk of being taken over by a larger bank, consolidation and these sorts of things because of loan limits? And we're desperately short on time. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all good. I would say business is always changing and evolving, right? Consolidation is part of our industry like it is in any other industry. it's all going to depend upon your board of directors, who's running that institution. Mm-hmm. But they're well capitalized at the end of the day. So
Right. We're
not seeing the 1980s where banks are taking a beating because of things going on in ag. Instead, we're in a good position to move forward and really help the farmers in our communities.
Ed Elfman, thank you so much for your words. Let's talk again soon, all right?
Yep, glad to be on. Have me anytime.
Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Davis Michelson here. Chip Flory will be back tomorrow morning. I had a spoiler alert. It's pre-recorded, but I spoke to Doug Hensley. He was good enough to give us some time. Joe, can you roll the tape on that, please? I'm with Doug Hensley from Hertz Real Estate. Doug, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us today. How you doing, buddy?
Doing really good, Davis. Always good to be with you and all your listeners.
Outstanding, sir. Well, we've flipped the calendar into 22 now, and I wanted to touch base with you before this year gets too deep on us. Can you just talk to us about where we're at this point? I don't know, seasonally, what should we be expecting in the next, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 weeks or so? And what are you seeing on the ground?
Yeah, you bet. So we came into 2022 coming off an exceptional, really an exceptional entire year of 2021. A lot of stuff going on, strong grain market, low interest rates, and a good crop across most of the Midwest positioned us as a marketplace. We had a really strong land market all through the fall, and it seemed like strength in the market just accelerated through the end of the year. And of course, when you get to the holiday season every year, you get to about December 20th and sales volume has a tendency to just fall off a cliff because people are shifting gears and wanting to focus on their families and end of year type of things. And once we get into about the second week of January, we start to see activity picking up in the land market again. And that's what we're definitely seeing right now. And really across the Midwest, anybody who wanted to sell a farm, it felt like last fall, got that done before the end of the year, and they were motivated by the potential for tax avoidance. There was some concern that there was going to be some tax policies that were going to change, and people wanted to get that in before the end of the calendar year in the event that those tax policies went into effect as of January 1. And as a marketplace, I think the market overall, again, through the end of the year, was as strong of a farmland market across all of the Midwest as we've ever seen before. And again, supported by low interest rates and high corn and soybean prices and just some pent-up demand in most neighborhoods. And here in the next, the next 6 weeks or so, as we kind of chew through the rest of January and February, I think we're going to see a little uptick in volume again. Thus far, we have not seen the market really bat much of an eye. The high prices that farmland sellers enjoyed last fall have continued here in the sales that have happened thus far in 22. And I think that's going to continue in the near term. I think the market is just beginning to shift in a little different way, though, than what we had in 21. A year ago, long-term interest rates were about every long-term interest rate for borrowing money for a farm mortgage was closer to 4% than it was 5%. We've started to see a little uptick in interest rates because of inflation concerns and kind of what everybody expects the Fed to start raising short-term interest rates, and the bond market has started to price that in for long-term borrowing purposes as well. So I think we're going to see a little light headwind from interest rate increases that will be coming. I also think something that is going to be a little different this year than it was last year is we've seen margins at the farm gate to be a little more compressed this year. Input prices for the 21 crop, a lot of people were able to get those bought in, mid to late 2020. At pretty favorable, levels, and the grain market at that time hadn't come alive. Well, that's not the case, obviously, for the crop going into 22 here. Input prices really made, as it's been widely talked about, there's been a lot of movement in fertilizer, seed, anhydrous. I mean, we're seeing prices that we haven't seen ever in some cases. So that's taken a little of the margin out of this thing from a production perspective.
Well, and let me back up to something that you had mentioned. There was concern over tax policy and some potential changes and things ahead of the first of the year. Those have not yet materialized anyway. Does that maybe take a little bit of motivation out of the seller's back pocket near term here?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it probably has. But I'll tell you, I think most people who were motivated by that potential tax avoidance actually made their move last year. And the sales that we're seeing right now are either estates that need to be settled or that the beneficiaries and executors are wanting to get settled before spring planting. Right. Or they're people who are just not, going to be impacted by a tax law change in the same way that, you know, there were some folks that were really concerned with some of these moves if we would have lost a step up in basis, for example, or if we would have seen capital gains rise substantially from the current rates that we've enjoyed for the past 2 or 3 years. If those things would have happened, it would have put people in a much different tax position. And so those people who are motivated by taxes, I think by and large got stuff done before 12/31 of 21. And today we're looking at kind of a more normal market and a more normal sales volume.
Mm-hmm. So if we're looking ahead to the rest of the year, and I'll ask you quickly, it seems like supply and demand has been fairly well balanced. Do you see that condition continuing?
Yeah, I think supply and demand are, going to be out of whack again, frankly, because with all the volume that we saw, we didn't see demand go away. And I think there's still demand in the countryside for high quality farmland. And going into this year again, I say that margins are going to be compressed, but the grain markets continue to impress us and they're moving a little bit higher. So maybe margins are going to be a little better than what I am envisioning. But $6 corn and $14 soybeans gets people excited to buy another farm and add on to what they're doing. So that it makes it a little more fun still.
Absolutely. Doug Hensley from Hertz Real Estate, I sure appreciate you taking some time. We'll check in with you as the year goes on. We'll see what happens. All right, buddy?
Sounds good, Davis. Tell everybody hi.
Thanks so much, Doug. Well, there you have it. Wow, that was a heck of a show. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. Thanks to my guests, of course, Doug Hensley, Dr. Vince Malanga, and Ed Elfman this afternoon. John Payne returns as guest host, and he'll have a conversation with Josh Carrington on interest rates, and we'll also have a little discussion, just a quick one, with Bill Biederman. And, of course, tomorrow morning, Chip is back. We'll have Ken Erickson and the Farmer Forum. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to AgriTalk.